On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Come Monday, it'll be alright.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
I'm excited.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
This is going to be incredible. I say those things because it makes it sound like it will be. It's all smoke and mirrors, ladies and gentlemen. It's all perception. It's nothing to see here. Go back to your homes. It is Monday. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's Monday. It's the beginning of another week. Oh, here we go again, right? How many are these in a year? 52? Wow, that's a lot. You know what? You can make this the best week ever. Not really. I'm just saying that. That's called motivational speaking. I'm motivating you, although in reality, it doesn't do anything. And that's motivational speaking. Somebody stands on a stage and speaks to a lot of people and gets paid to do it. But what they're saying is just an interesting story, doesn't get you anywhere because you can't do that stuff. I built a company from $3 and I have no college education and I built a billion-dollar company. And you can do that too. No, you can't. No, you can't. You never will. You won't even come close. Stop it. It's an interesting story. Here's money for an interesting story. But I can do that too? That's bullshit. That's motivational speaking. Don't waste your money. That's how he became or she became very, very rich, by taking your money doing motivational speaking. Ah, the circle of life. Elton John knew what he was talking about, huh? And by the way, Elton John, what do you have two first names? What happened there? Pick a last name and go with it. Come on, man. It's probably Elton John Rabinowitz. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm just guessing. All right, fine. Anyway, welcome. It is Monday. It's the beginning of a week, and I will motivate you like you wouldn't ever be motivated before. I do a talk show. I've been doing it for 30 years. Don't do that. That's your motivation. Don't do this. Go get a job. Don't do this. It's been very kind to me, but it won't be to you. So don't do it. All right, whatever. I have a very interesting guest coming up, of which I am somewhat excited. Nikki Holmes is an author. She's written a book that's got a really interesting mystery twist to it. I do like mystery books because it's a mystery why I do like them. And that in itself is a mystery. I never know what's going to happen in the book, you see. That's the thing. Most books, you don't know what's going to happen until the end. Although you know the end is coming because there's only a few pages left. Well, this has got to wrap up rather soon. There's only 3 pages left. See, so that doesn't really, you know. I wish I could write a mystery book. The only mystery I've ever really encountered was trying to get out of the IKEA store in less than 3 hours, which has not been achieved. It is the greatest labyrinth ever created by man in the guise of a store. It's not really a store. It's a meatball restaurant. That's all it is. It's a Swedish meatball restaurant disguised as a store. They make you go through this labyrinth of things, and there's some merchandise scattered within. And they fool you. They say, well, here's a beautiful table. Oh, boy, let's bring it home. But you need to assemble it yourself. Oh, no. What do I screw in the legs? No, we give you the wood, and you have to glue it together, and you have to get a lathe, and you have to get a buzzsaw, and you have to make it yourself. But we'll give you the instructions. It won't be in English, but we'll give it to you anyway. And, yeah, no, it's you have to build everything. Well, what if I want a pencil? We'll give you the graphite, and we'll give you a little eraser top, and you have to put it together, read the instructions carefully, otherwise the pencil won't work. But I'm only here for the Swedish meatballs. I know. That's why we do this. You think we make money selling furniture that you can't assemble? We make our money in getting people to assemble the things that we buy. And we make money at the end with the Swedish meatballs, because once you get out of this incredible maze that we've built within the confines of this building, you'll eat anything. And it's a joke, man, because, you know, most people, it was so funny, most people have hot dogs. We have them too, but nobody eats those. Most people have hot dogs or something at the end of, you know, or maybe a bar, you have a drink. We have meatballs. Some people eat it. You're going to go shopping today? Yeah, I'm going to buy some merchandise. I think I'm going to buy a desk and a bed, and I'm going to have meatballs. Wow, you got your day planned. Well, the bed and the desk, not so much. The meatballs, yeah. It's like the rainbow at the end of the storm. These shining Swedish meatballs are waiting for me at the finish line. That's pretty sick. I know. Or you can go to Costco, where they have $1.50 gigantic hot dogs. You've heard of a foot-long hot dog? This is like 3 yards big. It's a gigantic thing. And the bun is the size of Texas. That's a little bit of an exaggeration. The bun's the size of Rhode Island. For $1.50. Yeah, that's what the Costco membership goes to. That's what the membership fee is for, to pay for the hot dogs. Other than that, what's the point? I go to Costco every once in a while when I want to laugh at people. Why are you buying a 5-year supply of ketchup? You think you're going to live that long? You really have to project, you know. I'm going to need this. Okay. The only thing that I would buy in bulk would be toilet paper. That's it, man. That's it. Toilet paper. Because everybody has to wipe their ass eventually. Some people continually. Toilet paper you will always use. I consider it a wonderful Christmas gift. Some people say, Ron, you give toilet paper as a Christmas gift? Yes, for a couple of reasons. First, it's already wrapped. And secondly, everybody will use it. So they're not going to return toilet paper ever. First of all, that's embarrassing to return. And secondly, you're going to use that stuff, and you know it. You know it. And if you don't use it and you happen to pass away before you've used all your toilet paper, you put it in the will and you give it to your kids. You know, it's a gesture. Yeah, toilet paper's a big item. I buy that. I also buy, the other thing I buy at Costco in bulk would be paper towels. And I don't want to do a commercial for this, but the only paper towel that actually is worth being a paper towel is Bounty. That stuff is like a sponge. And when you need a paper towel, you need something like that. I'm not doing a commercial for Bounty. They don't pay me for that. They should, but they don't. But it's like the only paper towel really worth making. The other, they shouldn't even bother. The store brand paper towels, give me a break. Please, they disintegrate. in my hands. Cut it out. Don't even make that stuff. Just do the bounty and let's call it a day. Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I go to Costco for lunch because they have these people who don't work for Costco. I don't know what they do. They stand behind a little thing and they're handing out little pieces of sausage on a stick or maybe a little yogurt sample or something in very, very small cups. You know, those used to go to the dentist and they had these little spit cups, these tiny little paper perforated cups. I don't know if they're perforated. They had little pleats in them. That's what they use at Costco, little dental spit cups. They put the food in there. And most of the time you go, oh, that's very good. And then you look at the price and you go, no, that's not very good. And that's way too much of whatever this is. I'm not going to taste something and then buy a 20-year supply of it. That's a little much, you know, a little too much speculation as far as a new food is concerned. Also, the stuff at Costco tends to be very, very salty because when food sucks, they oversalt it because everybody eats oversalted stuff. When you go to a restaurant, it's all oversalted because the food sucks, basically, in many places. But you add salt and people eat anything. It's like an Indian food. I'm sure it's very, very good. But if it wasn't spiced up and in some kind of curry sauce, would you actually eat that? Probably not. That goes for any kind of cuisine. My God, the saltiest cuisine in the world is in New Orleans. New Orleans. On Bourbon Street, right next to Whiskey Lane. That stuff is salted no matter what it is in New Orleans. It's just like, forget the food. Just give me a salt lick because that's all that food is. Ron, it's a very good food. Some of that, I love New Orleans cooking. Well, all right, fine, whatever. Just warning you, your arteries don't appreciate it all that much. But whatever floats the boat in which you are in at the time, enjoy. Life is short, kids. You got to enjoy it. You got to. I enjoyed it when I was a young adult. Now I'm paying for it as an older one. But for a while, I had a good time. And that's pretty much all you can say about life. Well, for a while, I had a good time. There's your epitaph. Here lies Robert. For a while, he had a good time. That's it. That's it. That's all. That's all. That's all it is. Yeah, yeah. I don't have a rocking chair because I'm not that old yet. To me, there's no point in having a rocking chair unless you have a quilt over your knees because you're freezing in 80-degree weather. That's the only time to sit in a rocking chair. I get nauseous in a rocking chair. It's too much motion. When I sit down, I want it to be like solid to the ground, no movement whatsoever. Cushy, perhaps. Perhaps not. But rocking back and forth? No. No. That makes me sick. That doesn't lull me to sleep. I guess it lulls babies to sleep because their equilibrium is very different. Babies are only like about a foot long or something like that, like the hot dog. Foot long babies. Hey, get your foot long babies here. Get your foot long babies here. Actually, a foot long is a little too short. Is that right? I don't even know. It's been a while. Maybe they're 2 feet long, maybe a foot and a half. I don't know. But their equilibrium is like, you know, their head is like right near their feet. So you can't really make them too. That's why you can toss babies around. Be careful. Make sure you catch them. But you can toss them around. You can rock them. You can cradle them back and forth because they, you know, they don't get dizzy. It's impossible. Their head is too close to their feet. But when you're an older adult and you have circulation problems or you're more than like 6 feet tall, that's a problem. That's a problem. Moving around too much is a problem. Rocking back and forth? No, not a thing. I never went on amusement park rides ever, ever. Unless I wanted to lose weight quickly by throwing up for 6 weeks. Makes me way too dizzy. My head is a good 6 feet and a couple of inches away from my feet. So it's not going to work. That doesn't work. Do you understand? It doesn't work. These spinning saucers and roller coasters. No, It's the opposite of what I should be doing, and I don't do them. But I have no rocking chair. That was the point, but I got off course there. All right, my guest is going to join us momentarily. She is an author, a fascinating one, as a matter of fact. And we're going to speak to her and have a real good time. We're going to party and have a lot of drinks and some cocktail franks, which are the smallest hot dogs, by the way. You have the foot-long hot dog, which is always just a little bit less than a foot because they round it off to the nearest foot. And then you have the cocktail franks, which are just like, it's a joke. It's just a joke. If you don't have enough hot dog to call it anything, it's a joke. It's just a joke. Just laugh when you hear that. All right. We'll be right back after this.
Have you been injured in an auto accident? Have you thought about maybe getting injured in an auto accident? Every day, hundreds of people around the country win very profitable lawsuits for the injuries they've suffered in auto accidents. But it's not always easy to find an auto accident to be involved in that you yourself didn't cause. That's where I come in. Attorney Jimmy LaGuardia, aka Crash Boom Jimmy. I can not only represent you in your injury lawsuit case, but I can help you arrange and be involved in the very accident for which you're seeking to collect. After years on the job, I know a guy who knows a guy who probably knows a guy who can thoughtfully arrange your accident to the degree you want, from gentle fender bender to near-death experience. And if you do happen to die in your accident, there is no cost to you for my services. Attorney Jimmy LaGuardia, call me now at 555-CRASH-BOOM for your free consultation, probably somewhere down near the docks where there aren't a lot of cameras, or maybe in the back room of my cousin Lorenzo's restaurant. They make such a good bourgeois, you can't believe it. 555-CRASH-BOOM, call me today, because with Jimmy LaGuardia, winning your lawsuit is no accident.
Nikki Holmes joins us now, and Elle Holmes, as her book indicates, it's a fascinating series that she has created. Thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure, Ron. Thanks for having me.
She is an interesting person, and when you understand her background, you'll see where this series probably sprung from. We were chatting just before the interview here, and you live in France, I understand.
That's correct, yeah. I live on a farm.
Wow. So romantic, Nikki.
It sounds more romantic than
I probably, yeah. Things usually do sound more romantic. And, wow. Okay. Your history and your background kind of lends itself to, I think, where the series goes, which is fascinating, by the way. I understand that you went into archaeology at a point, or that was your interest, is that right?
That's right. I was interested as a child, and then somehow life swept me off in different directions. Yeah. But eventually, at about the age of 40, I went back to school to study archaeology, mm-hmm. and then since that time have been teaching history and humanities and archaeology.
Interesting. But you were doing something just before you got into that so much, I understand. You were a nun, may I say?
Yes, exactly, for nearly 20 years.
Wow. And then you did you leave that completely to get into this particular field?
Yes, it was a complete break after
wow.
20 years. I figured that had served its purpose in my life,
yes.
And I had served my purpose there.
Very good. Okay. And then you got into this fascinating world of archaeology, and in doing so, I guess, where did that put your head?
Well, no, it wasn't as screwing up as you might expect. Since I had always been interested in archaeology, it sort of took me back to my root interest.
Uh-huh. And, yeah, what is it about archaeology that threw you so deep into that subject matter?
Well, I don't know. I think probably what sparked it, even when I was a kid, was watching movies like Land of the Pharaohs and things. And so it was the idea of people feeling and acting the same as we do, but in exotic situations, and maybe wearing odd and beautiful costumes, but using the same kind of utensils, and you know, just the overlay of the difference and the similarity of daily life.
And when you get into that field, you do a lot of traveling, obviously, because these things don't happen in your backyard necessarily. Some people just walk around with metal detectors. That's not what we're talking about here. And
exactly.
And you travel to some very interesting locations, and I think that's what sparked this series. Am I right?
Yeah, pretty much. I've never excavated in Egypt, but I did excavate in parts of the world that belonged to Egypt, and Israel, for example,
yes,
and the Near East along that coast. And I also dug in Crete, and actually there's a Cretan character shows up in one of the new Neferet series here that takes place in Egypt.
Well, we're all familiar in writings with whodunit and thrillers and mysteries and things that happen in people's lives within the confines of the pages of a book. But this your series takes place not just down the street yesterday. It's a different place and time.
Exactly. Well, it takes place in the 14th century BC.
Okay.
In ancient Egypt.
Yeah.
But I hope readers will see a lot of parallels with their own lives and find the characters convincingly human, you know. So I trust there will be some identification, even though it's long ago and far away.
Yeah, some people might say that this is a part of history because it is so well it's so well described in that time period that we didn't really live in here. So we're kind of taking your word for it, and so the characters actually become a bit more lively than if they took place now.
Well, that's great. If that's what's happening, I'm all for it. As a teacher, my goal was to convince students that the people of the past were first of all people, you know, like us.
Yeah.
They felt the same way and had the same range of reactions, and that made their historical actions more comprehensible if you bought into that first premise. So I think then as a novelist, that's kind of the same thing I'm setting out to do, is surround them with enough human context that they become believable and comprehensible.
Well, that's the trick. So let's get into the book. Tell me what the setting is. One day a person enters into the lives of others and causes a little bit of mystery, doesn't it?
Right. Well, the protagonists are two young women physicians, which was unusual, but it did happen in ancient Egypt. Who have just opened a dispensary for the working class, and they've been having trouble getting patients. And then suddenly a man is brought into them who's been terribly wounded, stabbed, and he dies in a few minutes, but he has a sort of mysterious final word, and they feel that they owe him and his soul the solution of this mystery of who has killed him.
And that begins the journey.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
That actually begins the journey into what this person was all about.
Right, and the Neferet, the protagonist, her father, Lord Hani, has been a solver of mysteries for the king for a long time, so she's grown up with this idea of getting to the heart of unknown things, and it's sort of nature to her.
Wow. That's what we do in life. We try to get to the heart of unknown things because everything's unknown and we always try to get to the heart of it.
Yes, and I think that's why mysteries are so popular through the ages. People like a problem that actually has a nice round solution by the end of the book.
Yeah. So when you sat down to get involved here, you actually had a series in your head. Was that at the outset?
Well, this book, I did have a series, but the previous, actually, this is my third series. The first time, I didn't have a particular
third series.
The books are only loosely related, and this is a series that's set in the Hittite Empire.
I see.
Then the second series was Lord Hani, Nefert's father, and it traced a particular historical arc between the coming of Akhenaten, the heretic pharaoh, and his downfall, and the beginning of his son's reign, Tutankhamun.
Wow.
In which there's a very clear, well-documented historical set of events going on. So I kind of wanted to follow that arc, and then superimpose personal mysteries, you might say, on top of that.
Wow.
This series is more informally structured. It's there's less political content to them. They're more just your typical cozy mysteries.
You're a walking library is what you are.
Well, I sure have a lot of books.
Yes, you do, my goodness. How many books are in this particular series?
I don't know. I don't plan ahead. Just, you know, let it be a happening.
Yeah, that's kind of, I wouldn't say typical, because you're not typical, but that's what a writer says. I create characters, and I they just take me. They take me where they're going to go, and I follow them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's one kind of writer. There are the kind who plan everything
right
out scrupulously from the start, but that is not me.
No, it's a little more interesting, psychologically interesting, when the characters take you places. That's a strong character.
Yeah,
no question.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's no illusion of being in control.
Yeah. So this is your life's work. How can we? All right. Well, the book, by the way, is doing very well, and I've heard some great reviews on it. It's called Flowers of Evil, and it's available everywhere, I assume?
Yep, everywhere online and even in some brick-and-mortar stores.
Wow. What is it like to live in France and to do what you do? Is it the equivalent, in a way, of what happens in the United States? Is it the same kind of setup? Or is it very different in Europe?
Well, the writing, or the publishing, I should say, still happens through America.
Okay.
I have a publisher for some books, and some are independently published, but that all takes place through the American English-speaking network. So
I see.
I couldn't really address that from the point of view of living in France.
Yeah.
The writing, of course, is lovely, because I'm out in the country here, and it's very peaceful.
I picture you sitting in a room with a large window that's stained glass, yet you can still see through it, and you're sitting there and writing, and every once in a while you'll glance up through the window, and one of your characters will tap you on the shoulder and say, "Hey, let's get back to work here."
Yeah, that part's about what happened.
Wow. When's the last time you were in the States physically?
In June.
Okay.
June until the beginning of July.
Wonderful.
For a couple of weeks.
Wonderful. Well, yes, it's a great series, and you know, this is a great way to get into everything that you've done. Flowers of Evil. Is there a website in which we can follow you and see what's going on in your head?
Yes, it's www.nlholmes.com.
Okay, that's N-L and H-O-L-M-E-S, right?
Correct, yeah.
And the book is called Flowers of Evil, and you can...
Flowers of Evil, and I have another one coming out in about 2 weeks called The Moon That Fell from Heaven.
Wow. Do you ever sleep?
I didn't write that one too recently.
Okay.
It's an older one.
Okay.
All right.
Doesn't mean that you do sleep.
No, I avoided answering that.
Okay, yes, you did. You did a good job. You should be a politician also. Okay. It's a pleasure speaking to you, and what you do is fascinating, and I hope everybody gets into the series and into your writings, because they are different. They take place in a different place and time, yet one would say it could have taken place now, and that's part of the fascination of it. Thank you so much. One more time, where we can reach you?
www.nlholmes.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time today, and the best to you. Well, that'll do it for me today. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. where once again I will motivate you through my motivational speaking techniques. You don't even realize you're being motivated when I motivate you, because you're really not being motivated, but I'm telling you you are, but it's not happening. So that's the magic of the motivational speaker, of which I am, but I really am not. I can motivate you to do things that you will never do, and you won't do them ever anyway. That's motivation with a capital W. I'll be back again tomorrow with a new show, as I just said. Until then, I wish you peace.